Have you ever listened to the pod and thought it would be awesome if Jen stopped being nerdy about movies for 60 seconds and talked about your business instead? Well, my friends, you're in luck. Watch with Jen is looking for sponsors. Do you own or run a theater, bookstore, film fest, website, school, physical media firm, pod, streaming channel, or small business that might like to advertise on Watch with Jen? Whether you're interested in sponsoring one episode or several, please reach out. You can get a hold of me at contact@filmintuition.com. Thanks so much. Hey, this is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Returning to the podcast today, we have the terrific Susan Elia McNeil, the New York Times bestselling author of the Maggie Hope mystery series and the standalone Mother-Daughter Traitor Spy. Susan Elia McNeil has won the Barry Award and has also been nominated for the Edgar, McCavity, Agatha, Left Coast Crime, Dillis, ITW, Thriller, and other awards. A Brooklyn resident where she lives with her husband and son, Susan is here to talk about kick-ass women, and especially Maggie Hope, since the wonderful final installment of that series, The Last Hope, releases on May 21st. Susan, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing?
I am well, Jen. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be talking to you again. I had so much fun last time you were on.
Really, really fun. Like, yeah. A genuine pleasure.
Oh, good. It was so nice to, you know, revisit some of those movies together and then find out we had other tastes in movies that were similar. So, yeah, I had a blast. Well, congratulations on a dozen Maggie Hope mysteries. I really loved The Last Hope. I cannot recommend it enough. And I think longtime readers and newcomers, you could just pick it up if even if you're unfamiliar, you might want to go back and then reread the others. But they'll get a lot out of it. I think all kinds of readers will love this. The amount of historical research, the attention to detail is staggering, so impressive. You know, it's compelling. There's twists. So what is your research process like? I love that in the back of the book, you give just like a bibliography of where people can learn more and historical notes.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. I feel like I couldn't do a novel like I do without including the research. Yeah. Just it is so incredible. And like, people won't believe it. Unless you put in your sources, people will not believe you. It's
great. Truth is stranger than fiction.
So much of it comes from true stories. So I did a lot of research on what was going on in very early 1944, which is basically the time when the war was more or less won, but D-Day hadn't happened yet. And it was just sort of a matter of where that would happen and then the time of how long that all would take to shake down. So I really wanted to do this story about Maggie Hope, not only reuniting her with Coco Chanel, her sort of, I don't know if I can call it a frenemy. They have a very
It's complicated. Yeah.
Absolutely. And also sort of working in this assassination attempt, which is a true story. Again, there was this man, an American, SIS, which is the precursor to the CIA. And he was a shortstop for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, Paul Rudd played him.
Yes. There was a movie. It was a great movie. I love that movie.
Was a spy.
Yeah. The catcher was a spy because the catcher really was a spy. And the catcher was an assassin or would be assassin. And I just loved Moberg's story about how he was sent to assassinate Werner Heisenberg, who may or may not have, you know, sort of cracked the nuclear bomb code. But he didn't want to kill another human being unless it was absolutely necessary. So he actually had a number of conversations with Heisenberg before making the decision to not kill him. And I just thought that was such an incredible war story and just one, you know, we don't hear much about. And then Maggie has such a great background in like math and physics, and she's been following all of the nuclear research and no one knows this, but I've actually been like linking, like you'll see like little things like on her bookshelf or on her desk and some of the other novels that she's been following this along. So like she's been following all the research, and she's definitely someone who could make that split second decision. So I thought that was a cool thing to try to put in.
It really was. Yeah. And it's so complicated and really cool that you do incorporate so many of these actual historical figures. How, you know, intimidating was that when you were first starting to write the series? Like, oh my gosh, I'm writing Winston Churchill and I'm writing Coco Chanel. And yeah, like how much, I can't imagine the amount of research that must go into writing these books.
Well, this point it's a little easier, although it's never easy. It is never easy. This is, you know, I've written about Churchill many times. I've written about Chanel before. Heisenberg was new. I've also written about Kim Philby before. Kim Philby.
The yes. Oh, I loved the way you worked in Kim Philby. And I can't give a spoiler, but there's some interesting stuff that happens at the end.
See a few things that aren't spoilers. Kim Philby was actually working for British intelligence during World War II. And he actually was in charge of the Iberian Peninsula, which is Spain and Portugal. And so he would have been Maggie Hope's boss on this. And once I didn't even have that in my outline or any of my notes or any. And once I found that out, I was like, you can't have Kim Philby and not use him. Do you know what I mean?
He's such a complicated figure. Cambridge spies, the whole thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. So it was kind of cool too, because one of the things I tried to work into this novel also, without giving any spoilers, is sort of like the rise of the Cold War, and how as this war was sort of being settled in many ways, like the Cold War was starting in earnest.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's only, that's the kind of thing that like you can see in hindsight. I don't know that many people could have seen that, but Kim Philby certainly did. So,
Yeah, and Chanel has some interesting things that she says about Russia and the future. And yeah, it's really interesting. When you were first starting this series, did you have any idea, probably that it wouldn't be 12 books, but did you plot out a few in advance? Like, how did you arrive at that?
I didn't think it would be picked up. Well, first of all, I never thought it would be published. And then when I thought maybe it would be published, I didn't think it would ever go to series, but the editor who acquired Mr. Churchill's secretary got it in a 2-book deal.
Okay. And
like sales were very good. Yay. And people seemed to like it. So, you know, I just sort of kept getting extended and extended. And I just want to say that even though this is the last Maggie Hope, and I am pretty gutted and heartbroken. I mean,
yeah,
it's my life. I mean, it's going to be really strange. But I'm also so excited to announce I have a new deal with a new publishing house, and I'm going to be doing first a standalone about British spies, yes, but in 1966 London.
Ooh, very exciting.
Three women spies get together at a monument dedication, and with the daughter of one of their fallen comrades, decides to see who really betrayed them. And so it's somebody from the home team who actually betrayed them. And this is based on a lot of, again, a lot of research. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited to be in a different decade and different characters. And then I'm starting a new series, like a new mystery series. And it's going to be set in New York City in the late 50s. And right now my elevator pitch is, what is it? Mrs. Maisel meets the Godfather meets Agatha Christie.
Oh, so, wow. Sign me up. Yeah.
Thank you. It's going to be a young Italian-American woman.
Yay.
I decided to like work with what I have, you know?
Yeah.
So she's in Little Italy, and she has her own detective agency that she took over from her dad, who's a former police officer. And so we get to see her solving all these different mysteries. But sort of overall arc is that her father had to retire under mysterious circumstances from the police force because of, and then the whispers were that he was actually part of the mafia. So part of what she wants to do is clear his name.
Yes.
So that it's kind of like that, the mafia, both in New York and also in Italy, as the sort of backdrop for the series.
Oh my goodness. This just sounds like my dream series. So I cannot wait, Susan. I'm so excited. Yes.
Like, if you like it, then I have hope. Okay, great.
Oh, I am very stoked. Well, listening to authors talk about writing long-running series, I've been hearing them say things like, for better or worse, all the decisions that you make in that first book kind of stay with you. Like, characters evolve, but some of the details they thought both helped them and limited them in the future. So what advice do you have? Were there any surprises when you were writing, like, oh, I created that character, I know how to use them now? Like, anything that took you by surprise?
Yeah. Boy. You know, Maggie's just gone on so many different directions. Like, she's had all these different, you know, the first book set up this romance with John Sterling, who's a Royal Air Force pilot. And, you know, in any other series, it probably would have stuck with him maybe, but, you know, I want her to date a number of
people
and have different experiences. The other thing is that, you know, with Maggie's parents, like, things are incredibly complicated and, you know, people pop up out of nowhere. So, like, somebody can be dead and then sort of reappear anyway. So I don't know. I've sort of played with some of the conventions to get, I don't know what to say, to get around that. But, you know, because have fun with that.
Yeah.
So, and you do what you can. Cause you can't go back and rewrite the old books. So
for sure. Well, what do you have planned for this release? I know you're coming here to Scottsdale, Arizona, Poison Pen. Any local listeners, be sure to check her out when she's here. I'm very excited about that. But are there any other big events you want to, you know, mention, give a shout out to that people should see?
Sure. I'm going to be at the Mysterious Bookshop, which is one of the best mystery bookstores in the country, along with Poison Pen. And I'm going to be talking there on the 4th. So it's actually a weekend. Out. So the 4th at Mysterious and then the 6th at Poison Pen.
Okay.
So very excited about both. I love both stores so much.
Okay, great. Well, I loved in the acknowledgments when you spoke about the relationship that your readers have to Maggie Hope, turning to these adventures and good times and bad in their own lives. So how much has that meant to you along the way?
It means an enormous amount. I can't even begin
to part experience. Of people's lives. Yeah,
but not just people's lives, but people's lives at incredibly intimate moments. Like people who are getting chemo or waiting for news about something or getting through the anniversary of someone's death. And I mean, not all of it's like bad and horrible. You know, sometimes you're just like, oh, I missed my flight, and guess what, kind of like help me stay cheerful. But it's kind of crazy. One of the best stories I heard was this woman. She read the book, and her father was an SOE, and he had never talked about it. And she took definite issue with my use of the word paramilitary. And he's like, my father wasn't any sort of paramilitary organization. I was like, well, respectfully, it was a paramilitary organization, and like, these are the books that you can read about it, and et cetera. And then she went, and apparently it was near the end of her father's life, and she went and she asked him about it, and they had this incredibly huge heart to heart about what really happened during the war and what he really did for his country and the world. And I mean, I just get chills thinking about that. Like, maybe, you know, a conversation was broached. So, and otherwise the secrets would have died with him.
Yeah. Ask your parents and your grandparents these stories for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that generation, they're not going to talk about anything. So
I know. Yes. Just last week, actually, I received from my father, my grandfather's flag, and he had served in World War II in the Navy, in the Pacific Theater, and also in Korea. And he never really would talk about what he did in the war. It was always about the guys, the stories about the guys. And then at the end of his life, then he started to want to share some things, but he was still, yeah, pretty cagey about it. And I understand. I mean, he would get very emotional for the first time. He was, you know, kind of a staunch German, not too emotional, but towards the end of his life, yeah, things were coming up for sure. Yeah. And so I love that your book maybe inspired a daughter to ask.
I would like to say, and apparently it was a really good conversation. So after sort of, you know, giving me a little grief for my use of the word paramilitary, continued to converse, and she told me everything that happened, and, you know, we actually became friends, and
that's good.
Very lovely.
Yeah. Well, you're part of my life for sure. You know, I think people who listened to the last episode, if you haven't, Susan is one of my mom's favorite writers. So I first discovered her books through my mom, Fran. And I would go and try to find, she loved collecting the old paperbacks. I think she switched to Audible kind of midway through, but the first several I would go track down for her. And so I was very excited when I had this podcast, our mutual friend, Nikki Dolson, and some other writers, like, I would love to get Susan on. So you're definitely part of our life. So yes, I think you bring people together. Yes.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Well, I'm so excited to talk about kick-ass women like Maggie Hope with you. And we thought of a lot of different movies and a lot of ways we could go because, Susan, we have great similar mutual taste in actors and filmmakers and types of movies we like. And we kind of arrived at three. One was a totally new discovery for me that I loved. We should probably, I guess, if we want to go chronologically, and it has the most in common with Maggie Hope.
Yeah.
Kind of overlook the dumb title, but Female Agents.
Actually has a beautiful title in French, which I can't speak.
Does it? Okay.
50 Women of Shadows, Les Femmes
de l'Ombre or something. L'ombre. Yeah.
I took
Spanish. De l'Ombre. Yes, exactly.
That's a beautiful title, and Female Agents is a horrible title. And so I don't think it ever got the love in the US that it might have gotten in France. But you can see it on Netflix, or no, not Netflix, Amazon Prime.
Canopy 2. Yep. Yeah. You have a library card. Yep.
And you have a library card too. And it's actually I don't think the opening credits are great.
No, I agree with you. Yeah.
And if you were just sort of watching for like, oh, I'm going to give it 5 minutes to see if I like it, I probably would have shut it off.
Yeah.
Hokey. The music was really hokey. But once you get past that and they like start the women, so all these different agents or women with different skill sets get together and they start working together, like then the film really picks up speed. So I love that.
Yes. And I love the cast for sure. I mean, Sophie Marceau, of course, is wonderful. Julie Depardieu. What we're dealing with is French. So it starts with the French resistance. Sophie Marceau is playing a woman who has been recently widowed. She's in England and she is recruited into the SOE. They need to help safeguard the Normandy plan. And so other women are brought in and it becomes very exciting. A lot of things happen that I was not expecting. It's intense. There's twists. And it's just, if you love Maggie Hope and, you know, World War II history, I always love reading about the resistance and these covert actions, these people who are unsung heroes. I think you'll really enjoy it. So I appreciate you bringing that one to my attention.
Yeah, and it's actually based on an actual woman. So the sniper was Lise Villemur, and she was in SOE. And she's also known as Lise de Bessiac. I'm mangling all of these. You know, I should have practiced before this.
No, not at all. You're fine.
People may know her from SOE, codename Odile. She had a book written about her, and you can find Odile. And so she and her brother, who kind of coordinated the mission, were real people, and they coordinated a lot of things for F section. The only thing that I found sort of interesting was that their mission to get this British geologist who had soil samples in Normandy out, that was completely fabricated. And then the assassinating the former Nazi lover of the other agent.
Yeah, that was a little contrived. Yeah, but, that was,
but, you know, you could kind of...
You'll overlook it. Yeah. Right.
You know, I loved the women. I loved their growth. I loved their friendship. I loved the fact that it wasn't sentimental and, you know, they had their bumps in the road. It wasn't all just like all for one and one for all. Like they had their differing perspectives and objectives at different points. And
Yeah. And again, with the cast, what was so great, some of these other actors that were in it, it took me like a few minutes to realize the one playing Heinrich, the SS officer that they need to assassinate by the end of the movie, who has the ex-lover that it's a little contrived, was in Run Lola Run. I'm going to butcher his name, Moritz Bleibtreu. I think something like that. I'm probably just getting it completely wrong. But it took me the longest time, like, oh my God, it's the guy from Run Lola Run, and also the Bader Meinhof Complex, and, you know, some great films. Yeah. So I think the quality of the film, it was like a co-production of France and England, is, you know, overlook some of these things, but yeah, really good.
Really good. And I liked the ending. It wasn't a sentimental.
No.
I mean, you know, obviously we all know who wins the war, but you know, who survives, who doesn't, and how they manage things. It's all very interesting.
Had you seen that when it came out, or how did you discover that one?
I discovered that just, I think it was like the algorithm on Amazon, like you
okay. A lot of World War II. Yeah.
But then I just really loved it because I feel like women in SOE, first of all, there's not that much about them. And then when you do have a woman in SOE who's getting a film like Charlotte Gray, I did not love Charlotte Gray. I loved the book in that I thought it was beautifully written. I love the character of Charlotte Gray. She was a woman who seemed to only think about men, whether it was her lover or her father.
Yeah, that was kind of her raison d'etre in Charlotte Gray. I mean, I enjoy the movie, but it was sudsy and, you know.
Yeah. It was sudsy. And also, like, those women, they were not doing it for their lovers. I mean,
they
were really motivated by trying to do important things.
Right. Yeah. You know,
for the war. And it just didn't work for me, but maybe, you know.
Oh, I agree with you. A lot of times in these films, when they get made about them, they're, you know, having to seduce people all the time, or that's their whole thing. Like, oh, I fell in love with the wrong man at the wrong time, or yes. So it's cool to see some spy action, some sniper action going on. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, with the one exception, like, nobody has to, like, sleep with any Nazis or, you know, do anything cliche like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And when we were thinking of other great movies, you know, you did mention, we should just, as an aside, not a Kick-Ass Woman, but we did mention The Catcher Was a Spy. Are there any other films that, you know, maybe inspired you along the way while you were writing Maggie Ho?
Oh, so many. But, you know, I really tried to keep it more to the imagination and just sort of like the real life history of people. Yeah. And the incredible thing is, these weren't people who were military people or trained people. These were
everyday. Yeah.
Everyday people, citizens, just regular folks, regular women who then were cast into this like insane role that they never expected. So like just the reality of, once I sort of clued into that and like started reading like the bios of the women, mm-hmm. that it all sort of fell into place, like the missions and what, you know, could possibly have happened.
Yeah. As an aside, I need to ask, because they've made way too many movies about Coco Chanel. There's also a new Apple TV Plus series that I kind of started and then I lost interest about midway through, but it had great performances. What are your thoughts on some of the Chanel movies? Are there any performances or films you preferred? Like, I'm sure you watched them while you were working.
Well, you know, I loved the one about Stravinsky.
Like, yes, that was beautifully made.
That was a part of her life. on the south of France with the composer that I didn't really know much about. And granted, it's fictionalized. I did like what really happened, but I thought it was fascinating. And there was this one moment, politics doesn't really come up that much, but there's this one moment where you see her like exquisitely decorated apartment, and they pan down to this cream rug with black markings, and you see these little swastikas in it.
Wow.
So I really liked that one.
The performances were great in that one.
Yeah. The Christian Dior. I mean, I wanted to like it a lot more than I did.
Yeah. The first couple episodes, I was fine. And then I just sort of, I don't know. I haven't gone back, but yes.
I felt like work. So honestly, I watched the first few and then I sort of skipped to the end but I did like the idea of it. I did like the idea that finally, because here's an interesting thing. So in the Coco Chanel Stravinsky film, you know, they're focusing on that part of her career, which is before World War II. And then there's another one with Audrey Tautou, which is...
Was that Coco before Chanel, I think?
Yes. And then that's her, Coco Chanel, as a young girl and a young...
Yeah, a performer in clubs and stuff. Yeah.
They avoid her Nazi past by...
Yeah, they don't want to ruffle any feathers. Yes.
Well, you can avoid it if you don't go too far into the 30s. So
yeah. There
you
go.
But I did. I loved both of those for different reasons. And goodness knows, Coco Chanel is complicated.
Yes. And I also enjoyed, we should say for The Last Hope, it takes place in Spain. So you have a bullfighter and you have like a fortune teller and stuff like that. I loved all of that. So did you know anything about bullfighting before this? Did you watch some video? No. Did you?
I read a lot and then I watched a documentary. Kind of made me understand it a little more. I honestly still don't really understand it. Yeah. I still never really understand Spain, but I tried so much to like sort of get it. And I get the sort of like cheating death and that moment of finding immortality and the audience finds it along with the bullfighter. It's not really my idea of a good afternoon.
No, the theatricality of it. I actually saw last week a Matador's costume close up. There was an exhibit over at the Phoenix Art Museum called The Power of Pink, kind of in tandem with another exhibit dedicated to Barbie. But The Power of Pink had all kinds of costumes and, you know, fashions over the years. And they had this just extremely exquisite bullfighter's outfit. And I was looking close up at the stitching. I've got a photo, I'll send it to you after. But yeah, it was just remarkable to see that. And you realize it is a show. It's not a show like Susan and I want to go watch. But it was interesting to see.
And it's, you know, culturally important. I get it.
We get it. We're not going to sign up. You know, that's not how we're going to spend our day. Yes. Yeah. But moving on to other movies, our next two that we chose came out in, the first movie came out in 2008. The next two are in 2018. I think they're both excellent films, female-driven ensemble films. Widows and Ocean's 8. So I'm going to let you choose which one you want to talk about first.
Let's go to Widows, because then we can end on Ocean's 8, which is a lot lighter and more fun. Widows, I loved that it was so dark. And I loved that it was really, it was a heist film, but it was really about grief and mourning and rebuilding. And I made some notes while I was watching, and I said it's a heist movie in a minor key. So
That isn't the main thrust of the film. No, it's about these women.
Like that sadness that really permeates. So if you're looking for something like Ocean's 8, don't see Widows. But if you're looking for something that has so much substance and so much about life beyond the heist, then Widows is your movie. I loved it.
Yeah, it's two different sides of, you know, a heist picture, if you want to think about it. But this is a Chicago movie, like, you know, the whole thing. I lived in Chicago just for a little bit when I was little, but it's a city that still fascinates me. I have friends there, and I love there's a scene in the movie. First of all, the cast is just phenomenal, even down to like the smallest roles. They're all great. Like Colin Farrell, there is a scene where his character goes from giving a speech to minority female business owners, and we follow him home, and it's a continuous shot, and it's just a couple blocks away. And then his neighborhood is completely different. And it shows you that is Chicago side by side, you know, how different people live. And I think that's really important. You're dealing with the widows of a heist team, a male heist team. Their husbands have died while they were trying to get away with money. And now they are kind of on the hook for millions that were owed to this crime boss because they messed with the wrong people. And, you know, you're dealing with women of different socioeconomic backgrounds, different upbringings. I think one of the most fascinating characters is played by Elizabeth Debicki in the movie.
I love
Yeah, because you're
characters like
dealing.
sort of Polish American
Yes,
working.
exactly.
She was,
Yeah.
of course, you know, Viola Davis, queen.
One of the best. Yes.
Did you notice that one of the widows who did not join the core group, who declined to join, that's Carrie Coon from
I
The Gilded
love
Age?
Carrie Coon.
Yeah,
Yes.
but I honestly didn't recognize her, and I had to go back after looking at the, you know, IMDb to be like,
Yeah.
oh my
Like they
gosh.
got Carrie Coon. Yes. And I love Garrett Dillahunt is one of my favorite like scene stealers. You know, No Country for Old Men. He has a couple lines that are like my favorite in the whole movie. And he's great in this movie. I think my favorites are Debicki, Dillahunt, and of course Daniel Kaluuya is amazing, so scary. But yeah, and then you have Michelle Rodriguez. You know, you just have Cynthia Erivo in her first film.
That was her first film, and it's so
Yeah.
funny because before I rewatched it to talk to you, I actually saw the Wicked trailer.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I was just like, "Pete, that's Elphaba." I never sort of put it together when I saw it back in the day. So, yeah, it's just an amazing cast. There's this one scene where Viola Davis, she's responding to her lover's death. And you see her repress her emotions, and you can visually, like, it almost goes like in a line, like you can almost visually
Yeah, see
see
the internal.
your own body when she does that. It was, I thought, one of the most incredible pieces of acting I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how she does it. She exudes so much. Like, I think thinking in character is one of the hardest things. And you can also sometimes actors sink or swim when you see them in a scene and they don't have dialogue or they're listening, because some of them you can tell are just waiting to deliver their lines,
Well,
essentially.
that is
And
not
no,
works.
not at all. These people are in it. Brian Tyree Henry. I mean, just the whole cast. I think it's interesting. It's a very complicated movie. There are a lot of double crosses and people who know people. I mean, you have Robert Duvall in a tiny role. So that's just the level of greatness you're dealing with in this whole cast. But it's one that kind of plays better the more times you watch it, because like on the second or third viewing, all of a sudden you get the relationships a little bit more and how people are reacting to each other. And yeah, it's really good.
I really enjoyed seeing it a couple of times because of just the way like all the double crosses are set up.
Yes. Yeah. Like without giving away too many spoilers, something is revealed about like the Liam Neeson character and Robert Duvall, all of the characters pretty much we learned something about. Yeah.
I love that the screenplay was co-written by Gillian Flynn, who of course
Yes. Gone Girl.
Gone Girl and Sharp Objects, and she's one of my absolute favorite writers. And I'm proud to say she's an agency sister, which means we have the same.
Ooh.
So I have met her, and her name is pronounced Gillian.
I am glad you said it first because I wasn't 100% sure I'd heard it both ways, and I
Right. Well,
never
I
want to
haven't been
get that
able to
wrong.
do much during this, but that one I know. So it was interesting. So it's actually a Linda LaPlante novel. She's a British novelist.
And yeah, I've never seen the original miniseries.
Yeah, so first it was a novel and then it was a miniseries. And I actually went back. You can go on YouTube and see like little snippets of it. And
oh, really? Cool.
Boy, the hair, the makeup, it's insane. But you do get the same feeling of like women who are in mourning, women who are lost, adrift, who are not necessarily in, you know, I mean, this is not Charlie's Angels, even in.
No.
So it was very, you know, high stakes.
Yeah, it's heavy. The cinematography is really great. There's not a lot of like high key lighting. Everybody, you know, rips on cinematography and TV today. One of my friends, Jordan Harper, is like, it's always green everywhere. Like, why is the kitchen green? Like, turn on a light. And but this movie, it's used in a very effective way, I think. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's not green, but you know, just it brings out the emotions of the scenes. I also love how teaming up with these women, it brings in sort of the, you know, the dynamics sometimes that are at play with women, because we're raised to be competitive about, you know, men and jobs and different things and who has what and how they use it, and also just respecting oneself and judging each other. And I think that's really interesting, especially with the DeBicki character. I love watching her kind of come into her own, how excited she is when she wins the van at the auction. It's one of my favorite moments, or when she gets the guns. Yes.
It's just like a few like lighter moments. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I was going to say, I'm glad you brought up the miniseries and the book. British miniseries are great. And, you know, I was thinking when I was reading Maggie Hope, actually, about Foyle's War. I'm sure. Are you familiar with Foyle's War?
Yeah.
And then also thinking about DeBicki, I think the first thing that maybe made me think, wow, who is that, was The Night Manager, that miniseries. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yes. It's been a while. Yeah, that's great too.
Yeah, I know. So many wonderful British miniseries. Yes.
Absolutely. No. They know how to do it.
They really do. Yeah.
I like how it's like 6 or 8 episodes. Like, you don't have to invest like a month of your life. And do you know what I mean? It's like,
Well, the last film is a lighter heist movie. We're talking about Ocean's 8. I love this movie. I remember I went with my friend, Laura Felix, and we had the best time. And then I went home, and later that week, I think I took my mom. I might have gone back another time with a friend. Like, I just had the best time with this movie. I was hoping we would get an Ocean's 9, an Ocean's 10, and then it would have just made, you know, a series of 6 movies. This one is not, you know, directed by Steven Soderbergh. It's produced by him. It's directed by Gary Ross, who made one of my favorites, Pleasantville, which is a film I love.
I love that too. Yes.
And I think Ocean's 8 is a blast. Sandra Bullock plays the sister of Danny Ocean. This movie, I don't know why people were so hard on it. They were like, there's no conflict. These women are working together. It's awesome. Did they see Ocean's 11? There wasn't a whole lot of conflict in that movie either. Yeah.
Well, they were focused on the heist. It's a heist film.
That's what we're watching. We're there for the pleasure of it. It's a hangout movie. Yes.
Definitely. And these women are, first of all, they're so gifted in their skill. You know, they're the clothing designer and like the...
Oh my gosh. Helena Bonham Carter is hilarious. Oh
my
God.
She was one of my absolute favorites. Yeah.
Yes.
I just love seeing all the women sort of like be great at what they do and then come together and work together. Because, you know, again, it isn't always smooth at the beginning, especially. And so they have some bumps.
Yeah.
Things out, but then, you know, finally they kind of get it together, and it's a pretty amazing. And the cast, can we just like mention? There's Kate Blanchett, like Helena Bonham Carter, Mindy Kaling, Awkwafina, one of my favorite, you know.
Yes, Rihanna was hilarious. I mean,
Sarah Paulson.
I love Sarah Paulson. Yes.
Yeah. So, well, no, I don't want to talk about this because it's sort of a spoiler, but the last image is Anne Hathaway's character in a different phase of her career. And I thought that was just so brilliant in a movie about women who are stars in their own right to like have that be sort of like the last word on this film. When you see.
Oh, she's great. I think Anne Hathaway is actually the scene stealer of the movie.
Oh, for sure.
So funny in this. Another person who got a lot of, I don't know why the public turned on her for whatever dumb reason, but I think she's always been great. She gets the joke. She's able to become whatever character it is in this movie. She's playing an actress who maybe isn't as dumb as people think she is. She knows how to perform, and I think all actors, they're some of the most observant people like I've ever met. They think of things that, you know, I never would have thought of when we're having a conversation. They like latch on to things. And so I love seeing Anne Hathaway's character do that. And maybe people don't realize how observant she is and how sharp. It's a movie about people being underestimated a little bit. And I love the dynamic between Cate Blanchett and Sandra Bullock. It's kind of like maybe they were a couple, we don't really know, or just maybe they're, you know, buddies, but they're whatever that dynamic is, their interplay, it's hilarious. Yeah,
absolutely. The one thing I think they could have lost was the sort of subplot about the ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, that was, it's again like we're doing this great thing, but it's, we're doing a little bit of a revenge on the man who jilted us, or
But it took away from time we could have had with the women. And I just did not, I was not concerned.
No.
With him. I mean, yes, he was a person, but you know, it just didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. I would have liked to have seen more with some of these characters, like especially this, I think Sarah Paulson is always one of the great things in any movie or show she's in. And so I was fascinated by this woman who lives in the suburbs, and she's, you know, fencing goods, and she has like this warehouse or this a bunch of stuff. She's like, how do you explain this to your husband? eBay? And I wanted to know more about her life. Her kids were being annoying, and what her day-to-day was like, I think would have been interesting. And also the Mindy Kaling plot. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and her and her mother, and like,
yes,
pressure to get married. And yeah, I think this would be such a great television series, because then you could actually take the time to all of the female characters, and we could get to really know them. And that's, you know, what makes you love them even more.
Yeah. Did you watch the series Good Girls at all?
I did. I was just thinking of Good Girls.
Yay! I know. I was so bummed when that show didn't make it, because I mean, and there were so many of us who loved it. I remember seeing posts by like Laura Lippman, who's, you know, a phenomenal writer. And it's just, you know, we don't really get those kind of shows. And so these women in suburbia, for various reasons, Christina Hendricks, Retta, it's great. Yeah.
It is great. And yeah, it's like, I don't know, Breaking Bad with women. But
it is, yeah.
Funny and quirky.
Yeah. But with counterfeiting, yes.
Yeah, oh, with counterfeiting, that's right.
Yeah.
Loved that. Of course you love that too, Jen.
Yes. We have similar tastes. Yes. Yeah, but I think Ocean's 8 was so much fun. I also, you know, it's one of those great, when we were thinking of classic movies, you brought up like How to Steal a Million, and you know, you think of To Catch a Thief, which is not my favorite Hitchcock movie, but it's one of those you put on in the background, and you know, you see the gowns and it's sparkly and it's beautiful. This is a movie because some of it takes place at the Met, you know, first Monday in May, the Met Gala, and so it's just a beautiful film to watch. And yeah, I think it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And I think we all wanted it to be backstage for the Met Gala in a certain way.
Great. Yeah.
Like you
exactly.
Like maybe kind of sort of.
Yeah. I don't really want to like walk a red carpet or do any of that intimidating stuff or be judged for whatever weird outfit my designer makes for me. Like I wouldn't enjoy that, but I want to be behind the scenes just watching. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's plot a heist, Susan. That's what, After the Zoom, you know, we'll cut the feed and we'll just do that. No.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. So other films that you wanted to maybe mention or recommend that are kind of in this vein, or other favorite kick-ass women movies, books even?
Anything? Oh, you know, there's a wonderful book about an SOE agent, and then it was made into a movie. It's called Restless.
I have not seen that yet, but I've heard great things.
Yeah, I loved the book. It's sort of like the daughter, there's a daughter character, and they do the mother-daughter scenes in the 70s. And then they have flashbacks to the mother when she was an SOE agent, when she was very young in her 20s. And, you know, it all sort of comes together in a timeline at the end. I thought that was amazing. I loved the book. And I thought I don't even know if you would call it a series. It's like a 2-episode series. You can see it on Amazon Prime. And
okay.
So it's like a very, very, very long 2-part movie. But I thought it really did justice to the material, and I really enjoyed it. And damn, that's some kick-ass women right there. So
very cool. You know, I think we need to get a Maggie Hope series happening. Have the rights been snapped up at all? Have you had any, is there anything you can say about it?
Well, there's been a lot of interest. I will say that. Yes. Right now the rights are with Warner Brothers, and okay. I have my fingers crossed, but I have to say, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about this because, you know, I have no control, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
What can I do really? But I mean, it is still sort of out there making some rounds. Everything got kind of like stymied during the pandemic, but who knows? Who knows? And now maybe, yeah. You know, I've got more material coming out. Maybe we'll have an Italian American detective.
We show. Hope. Yes. We
only hope.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Susan, I want to thank you so much for doing this. It's always a pleasure. You'll have to come back either with your next book or just anytime you want to talk about movies, you're always welcome.
Thank you. I'll talk about movies with you anytime.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research, equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. You can also reach me or interact with Watch with Jen anytime on Twitter, either at Film Intuition or our Watch with Jen account as well. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.